VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today here on VCY America. Next week, Tuesday, October 8th, the United States Supreme Court will be hearing a trio of cases that will have a huge impact upon this nation as it relates to how they interpret civil rights in our nation, specifically Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The outcome of this decision could impact every church, every school, every business across the nation. Joining us to discuss this matter and to encourage you to be praying for this court as these cases will be heard next Tuesday, we welcome back Matt Staver. Matt is a constitutional attorney. He's a founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel, has hundreds of published legal opinions, 8 scholarly law review publications, some 10 books, numerous cases and briefs that have been filed in federal courts, state courts. He's argued 2 landmark cases before the U.S. Supreme Court, and he's here to talk about the significance of these cases next week. Thank you, Matt, for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You're welcome. It's good to be with you.
Just before we get into next week's court case, we're going to be delving more into this topic tomorrow. But, Matt, I'd like to get your thoughts on what's transpired in the House of Representatives last week, Speaker Nancy Pelosi moving forward with impeachment inquiry.
Well, this is just another one of those things where it looks like the Democrats and the Democratic-controlled House have no interest in the well-being of the United States of America. We have some real serious things ongoing across the world with Iran and other issues domestically and internationally, and yet they want to dig up this kind of nonsense. I mean, here we have Vice President Biden stating in 2018 to the Council on Foreign Relations, saying it publicly, there's a recording of it, that he threatened the former Ukrainian president with withholding $1 billion in aid. The former Ukrainian president said to Biden, you don't have that authority. He said, watch me. Go ahead and call Obama. So Obama was obviously in on it. And he said, I'm leaving on a plane in 6 hours. If the prosecutor that was investigating the company on which his son served as a board member and was making tens and tens of thousands of dollars a month was being investigated by the Attorney General. He says that if he's not fired within 6 hours before I leave, you're not getting the $1 billion. And he said, you know what? He fired him within 6 hours. Not a word about that. Then the other thing that happened, what we now know, is the intelligence agency has had a whistleblower complaint form that up until August of 2019, that's just this year, up until August of 2019, the whistleblower complaint form required personal knowledge of what you were complaining of. And in August of 2019, the intelligence agency added personal knowledge, or you can have an alternative, other people's statements. You've heard about it from others. Never before in the history of the intelligence agency were you able to do what this is in this complaint, all hearsay, third party, third hand, some of it's inaccurate, none of it is known by the complainant, and it looks like the intelligence agency, working with Adam Schiff, the head of the Democratic-controlled Intelligence Committee on the House, ultimately conspired to change the form. We also know that before the complaint became public, Adam Schiff actually sent out a tweet about the same thing about Trump and the Ukrainian president. And how did he know about that? He must have gotten a leaked copy, a previous prior copy, before it was actually filed, before it was made public, from the complainant. It seems as though he had some kind of direct contact with the person who complained, and all of this has to be investigated. When you put all this together, that it was Biden who threatened the former Ukrainian president to withhold $1 billion unless he fired the prosecutor that was investigating Biden's son, that the intelligence agency just redid its form to allow for hearsay, and that Schiff knew about it on the Intelligence Committee, the Democrat chair of that committee. It looks very much like they have just set this up, created this form, and allowed this complaint to just rely upon bogus third-party information to ultimately try to continue to smear Donald Trump, because they know they've gone to a dead end on the Russia collusion issue. Now they've got to go to something else between now and the election, and that's exactly it looks like what's happening.
Matt, do you believe that there's any connection between what we're seeing going on in the House right now to move toward impeachment and just trying to do whatever they can to stop this president from making the judicial picks that he has? I mean, he's really overturning a number of courts.
No, I think that's all. That it's everything that they hate about the president involves the policies, and they see that they're going to be losing the courts for decades because President Donald Trump has been reshaping the landscape of the judiciary by appointing, by nominating good judges that are ultimately being confirmed. In the last 18 months, I think it's 18 months or maybe a little bit more than that, but in the last 18 months, there have been more votes cast against judicial nominees, in other words, since President Donald Trump has been nominating these judges, there's been more votes cast against them than at any time cumulatively in previous history.
Wow.
That tells you something. These are Democrats that are trying to stonewall, and if they controlled the Senate, they would then control the judiciary, and they would stop every single nomination of President Donald Trump.
Wow. Well, let's get into the courts, Matt, because next week, Tuesday, and by the way, listeners, we'll be delving further into this issue tomorrow on the matters going on in the House of Representatives. Nancy Pelosi, Adam Schiff will be talking about the whole Ukrainian connection in this and the Biden threat, etc., coming up further on tomorrow's program. Next week, Tuesday, Matt, we were talking about the courts and the importance of the courts and the being, you know, people who believe in the original intent of the Constitution. Next week, Tuesday, that would be October 8th, there's going to be oral arguments on three cases. Bostock versus Clayton County, Georgia. There's Altitude Express Incorporated versus Zarda, and RG and GR Harris Funeral Homes versus EEOC. Now, these are critical cases that the United States Supreme Court will be hearing as their first term, as their next term begins. So much at stake, and I'd like you just to unfold these cases for us. Start with the Bostock versus Clayton County. We know it's these have been consolidated, though, but if you would break it down for us as to what these cases are about.
Yeah, there's three different cases, but there's two categories. Two of them are consolidated because they're in one category, and the other one is in a separate category. So it's two issues combined. It looks at words sex in the Title VII, 1964 Civil Rights Act. It looks at that section where it says you can't discriminate on the basis of, and it has different categories, race, color, religion, sex, and national origin. It looks at whether or not that word sex, going back to 1964, should be interpreted in the one category of cases to include sexual orientation. And the other category of cases, the funeral home case, gender identity. So in other words, they're wanting the court to amend the 1964 Civil Rights Act so that sex also would include sexual orientation and gender identity. And there's three different cases, two different categories. The Bostock case that you talked about involves Gerald Bostock, who claims he was relieved of his job in Clayton County, Georgia, as a child welfare services coordinator. He was there working with a Georgia County juvenile court system, and his employer found out that he was homosexual, and they ultimately said they're going to remove him from his post. So he filed suit saying that sex in Title VII ought to include sexual orientation. He ought to get relief. The other situation is a case to which Bostick is consolidated, and that's the Altitude Express case, also called Zarda, Altitude Express versus Zarda. That's a case in which it's also about sex and whether or not that should include sexual orientation. The court ruled in favor of the skydiver, Donald Zarda, who was let go after he told a female jumper, you know how they're jumping out of airplanes and they're strapped one back-to-back against another?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Donald Zarda was one of those paratroopers, and he would give people those jumps, and he would strap them on to the front of his body. So he had a female jumper that was going to be one of these first-time jumpers. He says, well, don't worry about being strapped to me because I'm homosexual. That's what he said. Well, Zarda died in 2014 during a base jumping accident, but his family continued to press the case on his behalf. And a court ultimately issued a decision, 10-4, ultimately found that the word sex should be interpreted to include sexual orientation. The third case, which is the second category, is the Harris Funeral Home case. That's a case where the EEOC got involved, and this is the EEOC under President Obama with Kai Feldblum, who was the former chair. She always said that LGBT rights should always trump religious freedom rights, and so she was part of the EEOC. She brought a lawsuit against the funeral home, and in that case, the owner had an employee who came to work and said, I'm going on vacation, and when I come back, I'm going to be a woman, and said that I'm going to have my name changed, and I'm going to be a woman when I come back. The employer said, well, these actions would violate the company's specific sex dress code and disrupt the healing process of the grieving families. I mean, you can imagine someone who's going to the funeral of a loved one, a friend, and the person that they're communicating with is transsexual, who is a man but is masquerading, in this case, as a woman. That is not the time and place to inject your personal views. You want to be sort of on the sidelines, basically just providing support. This could create some real problems for the grieving families and friends. And so the funeral home said, no, that's not going to work. That violates our dress code, and terminated him. And he then filed suit. So those are the facts of the case. But the big issue is, and we can elaborate this, whether the court will become an activist court. The ruling should be fairly simple and straightforward. And that is whether the court should become an activist court by injecting itself and interpreting the word sex to include sexual orientation and gender identity. If it did that, if it does that in this decision, which will be argued next week, decided sometime in 2020, then it would be doing what the liberal, radical, Democratic House has tried to do with the passage of H.R. 5 by including sex and sexual orientation in the Title 1964 Civil Rights Act. And that would have widespread, catastrophic consequences to churches, people of faith, and businesses in every conceivable area, use of showers and locker rooms, you name it. It would really reshape the landscape of our country.
Yeah, completely. And, Matt, this would include, as we said, schools, businesses, but this is going to impact churches as well and Christian ministries.
It certainly would because, you know, if the Supreme Court rewrites this and says, well, we're going to interpret sex to include what the people who drafted it never envisioned, which is really what they would be doing. There would be no exemptions to that.
Yeah, we'll pick up with further discussion after the break here. Matt Staver with us. Some critical cases next Tuesday, October 8th, before the United States Supreme Court. Friends, take note of these issues, and would you really commit to praying for the court as they hear this next Tuesday, this trio of cases that will have huge impact upon the nation? Back in just a minute, you're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, the age-old question, is it true that man evolved from the apes?
No, it is not, Chris. Humans were created separately. The animals, including the apes, were created after their kind, but humans were created in the image of God. Man is not related to the animals. But according to evolution, we are descended from the animals. It used to be thought that a rodent, a rat-like animal, was the common ancestor of all the mammals, but a recent study showed that the closest living relative of the common ancestor is the aardvark. How about that? We came from an aardvark. Chris, isn't it about time we recognize the evolutionary view as abject foolishness? Isn't it time we go back to Genesis and get it right?
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Visit our web store at icr.org/store and use the promo code FACT at the checkout when ordering your That's a Fact DVD.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Constitutional attorney Matt Staver is with us today from Liberty Counsel. We're discussing some critical cases before the Supreme Court of the United States, which will be heard next week, Tuesday, October 8th. And folks are looking at interpreting our civil rights in our nation, specifically Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. When they talked about not having discrimination based on sex, should that be defined as meaning sexual orientation? Should it be defined as gender identity? These are the issues that are at stake, and we'll continue to break this down. But, Matt, shouldn't there be indication to this court that sex at the time that they wrote this, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, that it meant biological male, biological female? I mean, we've seen attempts to add sexual orientation. We've seen attempts to add gender identity to the law, to the civil rights, but they have failed every time. Shouldn't that shout out to the justices?
Yeah, both of those are true, and both of those are good evidence, especially if you want to review the statute according to its history, its meaning, its intent of what Congress intended. If you go back to 1964 and you looked at why did the Civil Rights Act of 1964 come into being? Well, it was obvious. There was discrimination on the basis of male and female, whether you're male or female. There was discrimination on the basis of race. So that's why they ultimately included race and sex. It wasn't something in their mind. It was the furthest thing from their thinking that it included a man, but who was having same-sex relationships, and therefore it would include that individual or a woman with same-sex relationships. And it certainly would not be in their mind that it would be a man who is biologically, physiologically male, but wants to identify as female. In fact, it would turn the entire statute on its head. And then we'll talk about that more because I want to elaborate on that. But in addition to that, if you go back not only to 1964 and somebody says, well, that's 1964, it's out of date. Well, even if that is your opinion, that's not for courts to decide. It's for Congress's legislators to update statutes if they choose. And this Congress, multiple Congresses over the years, have rejected any amendments. In fact, the number of times that the Congresses, and we're talking about multiple Congresses during Republican and Democratic-controlled Congresses, during Democratic and Republican-controlled presidencies, they've attempted to amend sex. First, they tried to make amendments that would include sexual orientation. They never got enough votes to put that before the president to sign. Then they ultimately said, we're going to include sex and sexual orientation and gender identity. We're going to add these two different categories along with sex. And they could never get enough votes in Congress to ultimately put that before the president. Never has that kind of amendment gone to the president for a signature. The president's never been put from 1964 to the present in a position of choosing to sign or veto such legislation. They've never had enough votes in the House and the Senate to do so. And it's been attempted many, many, many times. So you have the original intent, but you also have the ongoing, repeated intent by the majority of Congress not to include any amendments, even though they knew that some of these legal issues were out there and some courts were going one way and some courts were going another way. They didn't have the votes. So you have a very clear intent ongoing over recent time of what Congress has intended, and they want it to maintain the majority. They want it to maintain with the word sex. Now, we can go into what would happen, and we did this. We filed two briefs. We filed one in the two cases involving sexual orientation and one in the case involving gender identity. But look at this, Jim, and it's pretty common sense. If women back in 1964, and they were, found themselves to be targets of discrimination because they weren't getting the same benefits or rights as their male counterparts, imagine now that you have a man who can become a woman and now have all the same benefits and rights and privileges. So what would that do to people in the workforce? What would it do? Clearly, you see it in competitions and athletics. You have men ultimately deciding that they're not at the top of their game in one of their categories of competition, so they're going to switch and they're going to become a, quote, woman. And obviously you can't change your DNA, but you can change your appearance. And even changing your appearance, frankly, is not even required in these things. You just have to say, I identify. And now you become a competitor in the women's sports, and now you're beating the women. So the women, you know, the different sports in colleges, for example, used to be that colleges were able to have just the male sports. And then Congress saw that women weren't getting some opportunities for sports, and so you have to have some kind of equivalent for the women. Now, if you have men that can jump from the men's side over to the women's side, what does that do to the women that have fought for these rights for decades? It literally undermines them. If women can't have private spaces, if they can't have their own areas of non-discrimination and their own places of competition, then it ultimately will destroy everything that Title VII, the 1964 Civil Rights Act, was designed to do.
Matt, if they allow the word sex to be redefined as sexual orientation and they allow it to be redefined as gender identity, wouldn't this just really clash with certain provisions of the First Amendment, namely the free exercise of religion?
Yeah, it would. And so that's where you have that clash in the Harris funeral homes. That's why the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission under Obama got involved, because its then chair, Kai Feldblum, was a lesbian. And she said that the LGBT rights should always trump, in almost every situation, she couldn't think of a situation in which it would not trump religious freedom. That's the First Amendment and anything else that protects religious freedom. So what this would do is literally destroy religious freedom in the process, because it would apply to churches. This is what they've tried to do in the House with H.R. 5. They passed it in the House, but it's not going anywhere in the Senate, so it's never going to be on President Trump's desk for signature. They tried to amend Title VII to include sex and sexual orientation. And in the process, they understand that the impediment to that, in part, would be a religious freedom claim. So they said in that draft legislation, no religious freedom defense. Well, if you have the court ultimately say, well, that word includes sexual orientation and gender identity, that means you're going to have a huge collision with religious freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you can't, as a church, discriminate on the basis of race, with separate drinking fountains, separate restrooms, separate facilities because of people of color. Churches would not be able to have male and female restrooms in which they would insist that males use the male and females use the female restroom. They would have to allow females to use the male and males to use the females. They wouldn't be able to stop that any more than they would be able to stop somebody from entering a restroom because it's only for whites, not for people of color.
Matt Staver with us here today from Liberty Council. And Matt, this is how it's going to impact churches across this nation. I mean, certainly this would impact membership. This would impact who would serve on a church board or who can even serve in the pulpit.
It impacts who serves on the church board, who's employed, who serves and preaches in the pulpit, your teachers in your school, in your daycare, and if your school, whether it's a K-12 school or a college university school, if it doesn't comply, if it says and insists, well, we have biblical mandates that male and female are unique, created in God's image, and there are male and female, and marriage is between a man and a woman. If that's your position, they might say, that's fine, you can have that position. But if that's the position you're going to put in practice, you're going to lose your tax-exempt status, and you would lose your accreditation. And for a college and university, that means no student loans. It means no, your graduates can't go to certain colleges or universities in terms of transferring or in terms of graduate school. So your pre-med schools, they wouldn't be able to pass those students on in many cases to most medical schools because it's unaccredited. So it has huge consequences across the board.
This really takes H.R. 5, the so-called Equality Act, and it says, okay, we can't pass this through Congress. What we're trying now to do is to get the Supreme Court to adopt H.R. 5, the Equality Act, and force it upon us through the judiciary.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're trying to do. This is what the radicals have wanted to do with abortion. They couldn't get that passed through Congress, so they got seven people in 1973 and then five in 1992 to reaffirm it. They couldn't get same-sex marriage passed, so they got five justices on the Supreme Court in 2015 to ultimately impose it. And they can't get this passed. They haven't been able to. And so they want some justices. They want five people on the Supreme Court to ultimately rewrite the statute and impose this on everyone across the country. The good news is that the retirement of Kennedy last year is good. And he was replaced by Kavanaugh. And Kennedy, I would be very worried. I don't know which way the court's going on this, by the way, but I'd be very worried about Kennedy being a swing vote in the wrong way if he were still on the bench.
Now, Matt, you've been greatly involved at Liberty Counsel in advocating for allowing people, whether adults or minors, to receive counsel from professionals on things like unwanted same-sex attractions, behavior, identity. There's the term today used called conversion therapy, but it's really a counsel that's going on there. Will any of your cases be impacted through these Supreme Court decisions?
Oh, yeah, they'd all be impacted through that, because if this case goes the wrong way, it would be a huge impact on the counseling cases. I think that we just need to get one of our counseling cases back to the Supreme Court, and they'll all be struck down across the board. But certainly we don't want this to go the wrong way, because it would be a very negative impact in our case. Let me just give you an example, Jim, of a situation. In Oregon, there was a transgender teacher, and I use the word transgender with quotes, but it was a person who's confused about whether they're male or female. This person, teacher, won a $60,000 settlement after coworkers allegedly failed to address a biological teacher as not she or her, but they. Some of these people want to be addressed with the plural pronoun, they, their, or them. And this particular biological male teacher wanted to be addressed as they. So some of the coworkers, they failed to address the biological teacher as they. And consequently, the teacher ultimately won a $60,000 settlement over that issue. Imagine, we're not talking about a he wanting to be a she or a she wanting to be referred to as a he. We're talking about a combination of a whole bunch of things.
Mm-hmm.
A person wanting to be referred to as neither male nor female, but as neutral and in the plural. As bizarre as it sounds, frankly, it sounds demonic if you really start to think about it. Somebody wants to be referred to in the plural? And that's what's happened, and this would accelerate it.
Matt Staver, our guest here today on Crosstalk. We'll have a few more points of discussion, after which we'll be opening phone lines today. Some critical cases before the United States Supreme Court. The hearings will take place, the oral arguments, next Tuesday, October 8th. Just commit this matter in prayer day after day. We'll be back in just a minute.
From the invention of writing, this world has been mostly ruled by kings. Power which concentrates into the hands of one person often rewards his friends, though, and punishes his enemies. The King of England was the most powerful king this planet had seen. So when Americans got the chance, they set up a government as far from a king as possible. A republic where the people are king, ruling through their representatives. How do republics rise and fall? How did 45 countries fall to communist dictators? Are these tactics used in America today? These and other issues are addressed in the book, Who is the King in America? By William Federer. This book provides the reader with an overview of 6,000 years of history and why America is unique. Discover the keys to preserving the freedoms of America's republic. Who is the King in America? It's available for a donation of $18 or more. Ask for it when you call 1-800-729-9829. That's 1-800-729-9829.
Tuesday, October 8th, this trio of cases coming before the United States Supreme Court. Matt Stavers with Liberty Counsel. They have filed briefs on each of these cases before the court. Matt, I'd like to bring in another kind of dynamic to this. Last week in the state of Michigan, we had a federal judge there block this new policy that was put in place by the state that banned state contracts with foster care and adoption agencies that refused to place children with same-sex couples. I know there was one charity that capitulated to the new rule. Another said, no, we're not going to. And now we have a federal judge that's blocked this new policy.
Yeah, I'm glad to see you talking about the policy that's requiring them not to contract with these adoption agencies.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's good. You know, it's the new attorney general, a woman, a radical lesbian who's in a same-sex a relationship, who literally has terminated all of her staff and has a very, very nasty, negative, hateful attitude towards anybody that doesn't accept her view. That's part of that same Michigan Attorney General's office that's pushing this onto the adoption agencies and also creating a list. Actually, the Attorney General there has been sued by an organization creating a hate list. I don't know what they're going to use that for, but they're using the SPLC list, and this is from this radical lesbian attorney general in Michigan. But this is a good development here because it was very damaging to the adoption agencies, particularly Catholic Charities and the Bethany adoption agencies that were filling a big need. In fact, if you remember, I believe, Jim, we talked about it on this program.
Yes, yes.
We talked about how the state had sent out an emergency alert. They needed more foster care parents.
Mm-hmm.
And then within a week or two, they ended up revoking the ability of the Catholic Charities to have any more foster certified parents because they wouldn't agree to put these kids in same-sex households. So they needed more parents. This particular group was providing them, but because they refused to put children in same-sex households, they got banned, and they've been doing this for decades in the state of Michigan. That's how radical they are. They're not really concerned about the children. They're concerned about pushing this agenda. And so if the Supreme Court were to go the wrong way, Jim, this would happen to adoption agencies, foster parenting agencies all over the country as a mandated fiat by five justices mm-hmm. on the high court.
Yeah. And Matt, this is trickling down to so many issues. I mean, the plethora of cases that are going on across this nation that impacts this. I just came across one here recently, here too. LifeSiteNews.com had the story of a boy, it's this month as well, October, the father of a 7-year-old boy whose mother is trying to transition him into a girl. He now has a final chance to save his son. This is a Jeff Younger. He's fighting not to lose custody of his twin sons, James and Jude, while being accused of child abuse by his ex-wife for not treating his son like a girl. October 15th, they have to appear in court, but the boy says, mommy says, I'm a girl, and he, he's with the dad, he dresses like a boy, he comes out, you know, with dad as a boy from his mother's house, but he's trying to save his 7-year-old son from being forced in this gender transitioning, and this, cases like this are happening all over the place.
They're happening all over the place, and the FDA just came out with, or this study just came out with a study with 40 some thousand individuals that are taking these puberty-blocking medications.
Lupron.
Yeah, and so it's just come out by reviewing 40-some thousand cases. 25,000-26,000 results have been very serious physical, and nearly 7,000 have resulted in death. So those kinds of medications that block the hormone production in puberty of a boy or a girl that is administered before they start getting the opposite sex hormones, and then they go through the surgery, they're very dangerous. So what we see happening right now is this is bleeding over into child custody and visitation, where the kid is confused and one parent wants to give them these hormone blocking, puberty blocking medications, and even go through as early as their early teens mastectomies for girls and other kinds of surgery for boys. And then the other parent says, this is nonsense. You're going to hurt my child. You're confusing my child. You're going to put my child in a situation where they're physically at risk. And if that parent objects, using common sense and other biblical moral objections, they can ultimately be charged with abuse because they're not allowing the child to have that and get the child moved from their home, given to either the state or to the other parent who's pushing the child down this wrong road. It's absolutely insane, and it's heartbreaking for the parents that see their child in this crisis.
Matt, next Tuesday, the Supreme Court hears this trio of cases. What is the process? When will we know what their decision is?
We won't know for several months. What will happen is when they argue the case next week, by the end of the week, next week, they will get together and they will cast their votes in a private meeting room. It'll begin with the Chief Justice first casting his vote, and then it will go down to the most junior justice. In this case, it'll be Kavanaugh. And say that that particular decision is 5-4 one way, there's a majority, the Chief Justice will then assign that case to be written by a particular justice. Even though that case is being written one way, doesn't mean that that may not change, and we've seen that happen.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen significant changes between the time of the vote and the time of the opinion being released. The most famous one in recent time was the Obamacare case.
Yeah.
And then before that was the abortion case in 1992. So continue to keep it in prayer. The time frame in which it would be released would probably be no earlier than April of next year. Could be earlier, but I doubt it. It's such a big case. And it could, well, they could wait all the way to the end of June. So I'm thinking somewhere on the earliest side, April to the very end of June is anywhere where we're going to hear the final result.
Matt Staver with us today. We're opening our phone lines. Folks, we'll take your questions on this. A brief comment, 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. Matt, how can people best be praying regarding this these cases next week?
Well, pray for clarity and just pray for victory, that they'll just do a common sense review of the statute to just simply say, this does not include sexual orientation and gender identity, that it means male and female. And really, that's the result. It's pretty straightforward. That would put a stop to all of these courts going one way or another way. But it is a serious, while it's a simple result, it's a serious result. And we know that there are people on the bench. I can point to them right now, that because of their liberal-leaning ideology and they don't believe in being tied to the Constitution or the text, you know which way they're going to go. And you know, that's going to be people like Ginsburg. She's going to push it all the way, and some other people on there as well. So pray for the right decision to just simply mean, very common sense, sex is male or female, mm-hmm. and it's not anything of sexual orientation. It's not men or women having sex with men or women themselves with the same gender, and it's not someone being confused and wanting to pretend to be the opposite gender.
Folks, I want you to understand again how every aspect of society is falling prey to this LGBTQ plus activist agenda. I mean, we've talked about day after day the things that have happened on numerous occasions within the education system, the indoctrination that's going on there. We've talked about what's happening as far as preventing counselors from giving counsel to those who have unwanted same-sex attraction. And now last week, I mean, I could go for hours, things have transpired, but now again last week, Daily Signal carried the story indicating that Mattel, this company that created Barbie, has now launched this new line of gender-neutral Barbie dolls, released now in Walmart and Target stores. They're said to be more inclusive dolls designed to meet the needs of children who don't necessarily identify as female or male. We're seeing this come through in cartoons with so-called same-sex marriages and gender confusion in it. Folks, it's going on, and the deception is great. Be praying for these cases as they go before the U.S. Supreme Court on Tuesday. Our lines are packed here today on Crosstalk. Let's go to them right now. We've got Melody calling from Grafton, Wisconsin. You're on the air, Melody.
Hi there. I had a question. They're going to go into the churches if the HR passes and make sure the law is followed. Will they be going into the mosque to make sure the Muslims are following the law?
Yeah, if the Supreme Court goes the wrong way, this would apply to mosques and everything, churches. It would apply to every house of worship, no matter what the religious belief is. So yes, it would. In fact, I've got a case right here. That we mentioned in our brief that we filed involves a Muslim. It involves a person who had religious beliefs that precluded having physical contacts with males outside of her family, and this person worked in a spa, and a man wanted to use the women's spa, and the Muslim said, "I can't do that," and ultimately was terminated. So, yes, it applies across the board.
Hmm. Oh, okay. I was just curious. I mean, it feels like it's the Christians being attacked.
Well, what you have with a lot of these cake bakers and other things of that nature is the Christians have been the target, no question. They've been the target, and that is ultimately the grand prize, if you will, of this agenda. But on the other hand, if this becomes the law, whether it's through a Supreme Court misinterpretation or through the passage of legislation, Christians will be the primary target. Make no mistake about it, but mm-hmm. It'll also apply to non-Christians as well, and so they're also targets, although they may not be the prime choice of the people that are pushing this agenda, but they would be included.
Thank you, Melody, for the call. Jordan is next in Salina, Kansas. You're on the air, Jordan.
Yes, I had a question that me and my wife just started foster care, and we need to find out when, you know, like the criteria of the foster care is that it doesn't even cover what we're talking about today. And so if we do get a child that does consider themselves as the opposite sex, you know, how would we go about that? Because we live in a Christian home and we know the Bible and all that, and so
I'm going to have Matt respond to that, Jordan, but keep in mind, your governor now, through executive action, has just implemented some of these aspects into order for your state of Kansas. Matt, how does one respond?
Yeah, you know, right now, in California is an example. In order to just be eligible, you have to sign a form. And that form would say that if a child ultimately wanted to, quote, identify as a opposite sex, that you have to affirm that child, that you can't do anything that would be contrary or provide any other alternative opposite option or counsel, that you just have to affirm that. It's okay, you can be a girl, we're going to treat you as a girl, we'll call you a girl, we'll dress you as a girl, even though we know that you're a boy. If you don't sign that, you're not eligible. Now, other states, like what Jim just mentioned through executive order, are working on that same thing. And until and unless they actually require you to sign that up front, you could still be a foster parent. But if someone complains, that ultimately would be revoked. Let me talk a little bit more about that when we return.
Thank you, Jordan, for the call. We'll have Matt explain further after the break. This is Crosstalk on VCY America, critical cases before the Supreme Court being heard next Tuesday, October 8th. We'll be back in 1 minute.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewradio.com. One survey after another is showing that young people today want to live under socialism. The question is why? One of the reasons is a lack of education. They have not been taught what socialism really is and how it will really end. History is littered with the philosophies of Karl Marx, i.e. socialism, being worked out. It always ends badly. And yet, many have never been taught this. What they've been given is a lot of lofty platitudes, common good, social justice, shared community. They don't understand the evils of socialism, communism, fascism, Marxism. Ronald Reagan, in his farewell address, pleaded with Americans to preserve America through an informed patriotism. Our young people need that, and it includes Economics 101.
Matt Staver with us from Liberty Council. Folks, get to their website, lc.org and lcaction.org. You'll find different news articles and briefs on this very issue. Matter of fact, Matt, I believe the brief that you filed with the Supreme Court is available through your site as well?
Yeah, you can go to Liberty Council's website, lc.org, and we filed two, and they're hot linked right there in our press release at the lc.org. Go look at the Liberty Alert archives, and you'll find it. But regarding the foster caring, that's a real problem because you'll obviously run into situations in states that are starting to mandate this with regards to conflicts with your own values, knowing what to do that's best for this child but not being able to do it, having to put that child into the same sleeping facility or room or maybe even bed as someone of the opposite gender because that child identifies or says they want to be treated as a female or male or whatever it may be. It's a real issue. We don't have time to talk about how you would actually address that when that happens, but if you have some questions, you can always call us. You know, I've got articles here in one of the briefs that we have, a law school student suing a doctor for refusing to give male hormones to her. She's female. A person, a female, suing because a doctor refuses to do a hysterectomy on a healthy uterus. Another one is refusal to perform a mastectomy of a woman who wants to identify as a man even though the breasts are healthy and the person makes a medical decision, I'm not going to remove those breasts, and now these physicians have been the targets of lawsuit. Right. You can go on and on.
Yes, and they will go on and on. It's going to get darker and darker, folks, and especially if the Supreme Court would rule in a way that would change the definition of sex from male and female to include sexual orientation and gender identity. Let's go back to the phone lines. George is calling from Geneva, Ohio. George, you're on the air.
Yes, I'm concerned about John Roberts. He's the number one man in the Supreme Court, but he's gone in favor of homosexual marriage, so-called.
No, he's not. Actually, he was one of the most strong dissenters on the homosexual marriage. He wrote a brilliant dissent on that. Actually, his dissent was better than Scalia and even all of the other justices.
Okay, I don't know when that came about, but it was
2015. Recently. Yeah, I mean, his was the lead dissent, and it really ripped. In fact, he wouldn't even refer to the five justices as judges, as justices, or the majority opinion. He said five lawyers imposed their will, not a legal precedent, not based on the Constitution or the court's precedent. So it was very strong.
It was John Roberts that caved on the Obamacare issue,
not on the
marriage issue.
He's the one who switched his vote on the Obamacare case.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks very much for the information. I appreciate it.
Thank you, George.
Yeah,
let's go to another Ohio listener in Conneaut, Ohio. Elaine, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you both for taking my call. Quick question. I'm very leery of vaccines for our children. And I know I've heard President Trump ask the health care system to please take out some of the stuff that's in it, that's been put in there over the years.
Right.
What are your thoughts about these hormone blockers being put into vaccines today without our knowledge, so that these kids are even more confused, that they don't know if they're a boy or a girl?
I don't know if hormones are being put into vaccines without our knowledge. It's possible. I know. There's a lot of consequences that are out there documented, court cases. There is the Federal Vaccine Compensation Fund that pays out millions and millions of dollars in damages every year for vaccines that have ultimately caused physical consequences. But I don't know about a vaccine that actually has hormones in them. They may be. I've just never heard of that.
Elaine, I would like to suggest you connect with the National Vaccine Information Center. We've interviewed them on Crosstalk,
yes.
NVIC.org, and they should be able to answer the question there.
Highly recommend that organization.
Great. Thank you, Elaine.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Again, that's NVIC.org. Daniel from Lublin, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Yes. I had a question about the Equality Act, so-called. It says that you can't use the Constitution as a defense for religious freedom.
Well, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how is it that Congress can pass a law that's contrary to the Constitution on the face of it?
Well, what they're saying in that law is that you can't use the federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act. So Congress can set aside its own previous statute. They can't set aside the First Amendment. So the question of whether or not you would be able to raise the First Amendment is something that's undecided yet if that law were to pass. But certainly you wouldn't be able to raise the federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And if you go back, it's the Hobby Lobby case with the Obamacare. What did they use? First Amendment? No. They used their Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and that's what ultimately allowed them to win. Why? Because that was the basis. So they wouldn't be able to raise that, or others wouldn't be able to raise the federal RFRA law.
Yeah, so the First Amendment hangs in the balance.
Right.
Thank you, Daniel. Jim in Wisconsin, you're a final caller. You're on the air.
Yes, appreciate you guys so much for doing this program. Thank you, Matt, for what you're doing. I'm right in your corner.
Thank you.
Like this previous caller is like, I mean, aren't these laws being passed, aren't they a violation of our First Amendment rights and freedom of speech, freedom of religion? And can't we, isn't there somebody going to stand up and say, wait a minute, because I can see this happening where there's people's freedom of speech is just being squelched in everywhere, in schools, in businesses.
Yeah.
You cannot speak against
that. No, I share your concern, and certainly we need to have... And the Supreme Court has dodged that particular question twice now. They're eventually going to have to address that,
yes.
the conflict between religious freedom and this whole LGBT issue, but they haven't yet. They've dodged it. So far they've nibbled at it, but they haven't actually addressed it head on. They're going to need to. This particular case will not be a conflict between religious freedom and LGBT. It's just on the statute and whether it includes sexual orientation and gender identity, the consequences of which would be a huge clash against religious freedom.
Thank you, Jim, for the call. We're out of time. Matt Staver, our guest here today on Crosstalk. Again, the website, lc.org, lc.org. They have many news releases there, links to their briefs that they've filed here. You may also call them with your questions, 407-875-1776. Matt, as always, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Jim. Good to be with you.
And folks, a reminder, Tuesday, October 8th, this trio of cases will be heard by the court. Would you commit to pray day after day here as this case comes forth here on Tuesday? Our time is gone. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.